Chapter 10, The Wedding Ceremony. Over the next few weeks, Mr. Rochester insisted on buying me dresses and jewellery to suit a lady. However, I felt very uncomfortable with this. I was used to plain clothing and could not imagine I would ever wear the bright gold gowns and silver hats he wanted to buy for me. I couldn't be what I wasn't. For the first time since my return from Gateshead, I remembered my Uncle John Eyre's letter to Mrs. Reed. He had offered to make me his heir. It would be very helpful if I had my own money, I thought. Then I would be independent. I'll write to my Uncle John and tell him I didn't die of typhus at Lowood School, and I'm going to be married, and to whom? I would feel more equal and less dependent on Mr. Rochester if we knew that one day I'd bring him some money of my own. I told Mr. Rochester that I would continue being Adele's governess and still earn my £30 a year for it. I would buy my own clothes from this money. I didn't want to be dressed and spoiled like a doll by my husband. "So what will I give you?" asked Mr. Rochester. "You'll give me your love, and I'll give you mine," I replied, "and then we'll be equal." It was 2 days before the wedding, and everything was ready. My wedding dress and veil were in the wardrobe. My suitcases for our honeymoon in London were packed and labelled Mrs. Jane Rochester. Who was she? She would only be born after the wedding. Mr. Rochester was away, attending to last-minute business, and I was very anxious for him to return. It was getting late. Where was he? I needed to talk to him. He arrived after an hour, pleased to see me, but I could not hide my agitation from him. After supper, we sat down together, and Mr. Rochester looked at me. "What's troubling you, Jane?" he asked. "Are you scared I won't be a good husband?" "Not at all, sir," I replied, "but I had a disturbing dream last night." "Go on, Jane," he replied. "Tell me about it." "I dreamt that Thornfield Hall was empty. Only wild animals lived here. I was looking for you, but couldn't find you. I woke up and thought it was morning, but it wasn't. A candle was burning on the dressing table. I thought Sophie had come in because my wardrobe door was open and somebody was looking in it. But it wasn't Sophie, and it wasn't Mrs. Fairfax," I said. "It wasn't even Grace Poole." "It had to be one of them," said Mr. Rochester softly. "No, sir," I replied. "It was a large woman with thick, dark hair." "Did you see her face?" he inquired. "Yes, sir," I said. "She took my veil from the wardrobe, put it on her head, and went to the mirror. I saw her reflection. She had wild red eyes and purple lips. She looked like a monster." "And what did she do?" asked Mr. Rochester. "She took my veil from her head, tore it, and threw the pieces on the floor. Then she came towards my bed. She put the candle close to see my face, and I fainted from fear. I thought it was a bad dream, but when I woke up this morning, I saw the torn veil on the floor." "Jane, you're mistaken. That woman was Grace Poole," said Mr. Rochester. "There's nothing to worry about, but tonight you must sleep in Adele's room with her. Promise me." I promised, feeling calmer now, but that night, when Adele was asleep, I cried. It was the last night of my life as a single woman, but I was suddenly terrified, scared of the monster and scared of the future. The next day, we walked to the church for the wedding. I walked slowly inside and stood next to Mr. Rochester. He held my hand and the service began. Suddenly, a voice cried, "Stop the wedding!" Mr. Rochester looked at the priest and said quietly, "Continue with the service." "I'm sorry, but I can't continue," said the priest. "I must hear what the problem is." A voice at the back of the church continued, "Mr. Rochester is not a free man. He's already married and his wife is still alive." "Who are you?" cried Mr. Rochester. "Show yourself." A man stepped forward. "My name is Mr. Briggs, and I'm a lawyer," the man said. "I've got a document here that proves Mr. Rochester already has a living wife, Bertha Mason. They were married 15 years ago." Mr. Rochester turned red with anger. "That document, if it is genuine, may prove I've been married, but it doesn't prove that the woman is still alive," he cried. "She was living 3 months ago," replied the lawyer. "How do you know?" shouted Mr. Rochester. "I've got a witness to the fact right here. Mr. Mason, please step forward and tell us what you know." Mr. Mason stepped forward. I remembered him well from the night the doctor checked his injuries. Mr. Rochester turned and stared at him with hostility in his eyes. "I can confirm that Mr. Rochester's wife is my sister, Bertha Mason," Mason declared. "She lives at Thornfield Hall, and I saw her there last April." "A wife!" exclaimed the priest. "Impossible! I'm an old resident of this neighbourhood, sir, and I've never heard of or seen a Mrs. Rochester at Thornfield Hall." Mr. Rochester smiled, a strange smile. "Yes," he said bitterly. "I was careful that no one saw her because she's a violent and dangerous lunatic. She was always insane, but her family hid it from me. You can all come and see my wife. I keep her locked up so she can't injure anybody or herself. Come and see the monster I married. Come, all of you. There'll be no wedding today." He led us into the house, still holding my hand. We entered the house, and Mrs. Fairfax, Adele, and Sophie came to greet us happily, ready to congratulate us. "Up the stairs, all of you," cried the master. "Right up to the top floor. Enough congratulations. Who wants them? Not me. They're 15 years too late. Look, Mason, she bit and stabbed you here." We all went upstairs and he opened a door. Mrs. Poole sat in front of a fire knitting. At the other end of the room, I saw something. I didn't know if it was human or a monster. "Good morning, Grace," said Mr. Rochester. "How are you both today? We've come to visit you." "We're very well, thank you, sir," said Grace, shocked to see so many people entering the room. Suddenly, with a ferocious cry, the lunatic ran to Mr. Rochester and attacked him violently, biting and kicking him. Mr. Rochester tried to fight her off, and Grace Poole tried to help him. I could do nothing except watch the terrible scene. Finally, he managed to tie the woman's arms behind her back, and then he looked at us all. "Meet my wife," he shouted. "Can you see the difference between this monster and this lovely young girl? Now do you understand why I wanted some peace and happiness with her? Go, all of you. I must lock up my wife again." We left. I locked myself in my room. I didn't cry or regret the life that now would never take place. I removed my wedding dress and put on my simple clothes, a dress I thought I had worn for the last time as Jane Eyre. I lay on my bed, feeling weak and very, very tired. What was my future going to be? I had lost everything, and all I wanted now was to close my eyes and rest.